Members, it's 1 p.m. I'm going to call the March 3rd, 2021 Tax Committee to order. Ms. Griska, please call the roll.
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Lislegard.
Present.
Lislegard, present. Davids.
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Carlson. Carlson. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo.
Present.
Garofalo, present. Gomez.
Present.
Gomez, present. Herr.
Present.
Herr, present. Hertas. Hertas. Howard. Howard. McDonald.
McDonald, present.
McDonald, present. Miller.
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen, present. Robbins. Robbins. Sindel.
Present.
Sindel, present. Schultz. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson.
Present.
Stevenson, present. Swazinski.
Present.
Swazinski, present. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. We have a quorum.
Ms. Griska, thank you so much. We have a quorum. We next move to approval of the minutes. Representative Lislegard, would you like to move approval of the March 2nd, 2021 minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lislegard moves approval of the March 2nd, 2021 minutes of the Tax Committee. Any discussion, comments, criticisms? Seeing none, if you would temporarily unmute yourself as we take the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The March 2nd, 2021 minutes are adopted, are approved. Members, before we move to the first bill, I just want to say I also have a bill up in the Ag Finance Committee. So they're going to text me when my bill is up. So I may have to interrupt at that point. I apologize ahead of time for when I do that and then turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Lislegard. So with that, our first bill on the agenda is House File 1201. Representative Leppard is before the committee. Would someone like to move Representative Leppard's bill?
So moved, Chair.
Representative Joachim moves House File 1201 for possible inclusion into the House Tax Omnibus Bill. Representative Leppard, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have an A1 amendment as well.
Very good. So Representative Joachim, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
Representative Joachim moves the A1 amendment. Representative Leppard, I see it looks very, very small. Any comments on this before
it's just
we...
technical. It deletes an and inserts an or. That's
very
it.
Good. I'm going to take a vote then, unless there's any questions on the and or the or. Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Leppert, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Minnesota currently charges nonprofit organizations sales tax on purchases of prepared food, like food purchased from a caterer. I believe the law was initially intended to cover food purchased for galas and other fundraising events. An unintended consequence is that nonprofit organizations that purchase prepared food to provide meals and snacks to youth during after school and summer activities through the federal meals program also have to pay sales tax on those meals as well. So this bill would create a narrow sales tax exemption for nonprofit organizations purchasing prepared food as part of their charitable mission for the federal child and adult care food program or the federal summer food service program. I have a few testifiers with me today, and the first on my list, at least, is Matt Norris of Youth Prize.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Leppert. So, Matt Norris, if you would please identify yourself, welcome to the committee, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Matt Norris, and I'm the Policy Director at Youth Prize, a statewide organization with a mission of increasing equity with and for Minnesota's Indigenous, low-income, and racially diverse youth. One of the programs we're most proud of at Youth Prize is our nutrition program. We serve as a sponsor for the Federal Meals Program, known as CACFP during the school year and SFSP for the summer. We work with community centers, youth serving organizations, libraries, and houses of worship that want to be able to provide meals and snacks during the after school and summer programming that they provide. As the sponsor of the program, organizations like ours take care of all the administrative and logistical work for the Federal Meals Program. We deal with all the state and federal government paperwork. We work with a caterer to procure the meals so that all the sites have to do each day is receive the meals and provide them to the students. This intermediary role also allows us to easily identify and respond to gaps in the ecosystem. This has been especially true during the pandemic. When schools shut down and we shifted to the distance learning model, we worked with our food vendor to fill gaps in the system. We opened recreation and community centers to distribute food in St. Paul and Minneapolis as early as April. And then in June, we opened up 36 different locations across the metro to serve curbside meals while working closely with local school districts and their operations. We coordinated with counties, city agencies, and other community organizations and schools to make sure that no young person was going hungry. To give you a sense of the scope of the work that we've done in the past year for the pandemic, it took us 5 years of our program to reach the 1 million meals served mark in January 2020. Then it took us only another 10 months to October 2020 to reach the 2 million meals served. 2020 was also our first expansion outside the metro area, expanding to several sites in Rice County. And we're currently working with Lutheran Social Services on an expansion that would allow us to serve sites all along the western half of Minnesota. And while it's wonderful that we've been able to respond to these community needs, it has exacerbated a challenge with the program, the fact that sponsors like us have to pay sales tax on each one of these meals. In fact, in all of 2020, we ended up paying almost $250,000 in sales tax on these meals. The federal government reimburses us for the cost of the meal, but not necessarily the tax. And then we must also raise additional funds to operate the program, hire the staffing. To help you understand the scope of the sales tax that we're paying, it would pay for another 72,000 lunches or suppers last year, another 119,000 breakfasts, or another 263,000 snacks for young people. Saving the money on the sales tax would also allow us to expand the program by purchasing a food truck for distribution in rural areas, hiring additional staff to add more locations, and upgrade critical infrastructure like fridges, tables, and holding units at our different sites. We're incredibly appreciative of Representative Lippert's leadership on this issue, and we're also very grateful for the support that many of you on the committee have expressed for this bill. To close, I urge you to support House File 1201 for inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. It's a small bill with big impact to fix an unintended consequence of Minnesota's tax laws. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Norris. I think we'll take questions after all three testifiers. So next up, we have Becky Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Yep, my name is Becky Ford. I am the director of a small nonprofit called Faribault Youth Investment, located in Faribault, Minnesota. Faribault Youth Investment really works to ensure that all of Faribault's young people thrive. Our overall goal is to positively impact youth outcomes on a population level. We do this through several initiatives, really looking at systems change. Some of our priorities are increasing youth voice and leadership in the Faribault community. We're working to address declining out of school time program participation through our Youth Connect network. And we're actively working to increase youth success at key benchmarks through our Faribault Cradle to Career initiative. Part of our young people being successful and thriving is having their basic needs met, which includes access to healthy meals. One of our newer initiatives has been partnering with the local school district here to provide 7-day meal packs to dense low-income neighborhoods where transportation is often a barrier for families attempting to access resources such as food. So a little bit of history about how we got involved in food access. It wasn't necessarily one of our priorities a few years ago, but it is now. In the past, we had been supportive of our two community school locations that also serve as after-school meal sites. Every day that the young people come to after-school programming at our middle school and our Jefferson Elementary School, they're able to access a meal before going home. And that is available to their parents as well. And it's just a really nice time for people to experience community. And in a way, it helps to reduce some of the stigma that food insecure families may experience. So that was sort of my first involvement with the after school meals program. But since then, the pandemic has really revealed how much youth and families really depend upon the meals that they receive during and after school. And this is true even here in rural Minnesota. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit, the fragility of existing food access systems in Faribault was really brought to the light. I can say that no one really knew how widespread food insecurity was. And many organizations, nonprofits, churches, we were all sort of operating under the assumption that the current systems were meeting the need. But the reality was the issue of food insecurity was bigger than we knew, and our resources to address it were far too sparse. As the pandemic wore on, the increasing demand strained existing efforts, and actually one of our long-established food shelves closed in June, leaving youth and families without that resource that had been there previously. But before that happened, Faribault Youth Investment was becoming involved in starting a collaborative mobile food distribution. And we actually served 1,000 unique households from April through December of 2020. Since then, the mobile distribution has transitioned to another nonprofit that's kind of their lane where they spend their time, and they plan to open a choice model food shelf in the spring. So this is a win for our community. But since then, we've continued to partner with the local school district. We've continued to partner with Youth Prize because we realize that this need existed before COVID-19, and it's going to exist after the pandemic has subsided. So knowing that all the additional food resources that are sort of flooding into communities and have been for the past several months, we know that they will eventually stop. And we feel it's important that we continue to expand the number of nutrition hubs in Faribault to continue to meet that need. And this is where Youth Prize really comes in. We've been working with Youth Prize over the last few months to expand meal sites across our community that aren't affiliated with the school programs. The entire city of Faribault actually qualifies for this program because of the percentage of students that qualify for free and reduced price meals. So this is really a significant opportunity to expand the meal program in our community to various sites. We're currently working with the church, Trinity Lutheran Church, and this is advantageous because they are centrally located. Our other two sites are on the more southern end of our community and aren't necessarily walkable or accessible to folks that maybe live on the north side of the community. And so it's a great opportunity to work with Trinity because they're kind of right in the heart of the city. They're close to downtown and they're close to the northern neighborhoods that are typically occupied by more low-income families. So in working with Trinity and working with the Youth Prize staff, I think the interest and the eagerness comes to the fact that there's no cost to the church and that they don't have to invest the time and the resources in coordinating that procurement of food or filling out the forms, as Matt alluded to, or doing any of that technical behind the scenes work. They can just really focus on what they do best, and that is serving families. Eventually, we will be able to spend our time assisting Trinity with outreach efforts and scaling up the program rather than us doing the behind the scenes work. The beauty of what Youth Prize does is they really are that intermediary. And then Youth Prize also provides the training and the guidelines so that we're implementing this program according to best practice. And we'll simply be looking for more sites as long as we can demonstrate success with Trinity in the coming months. And we need Youth Prize to continue to expand to rural Minnesota and communities like ours in order to help us meet the nutritional needs. We just don't have the infrastructure, the civic infrastructure, to be able to necessarily open additional sites. And so partnering with Youth Prize allows us to do that. So thank you for your time, and I encourage you to support Bill number 1201. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ford. Next, we have Joni Essenberg. You would please introduce yourself. Welcome to the committee and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Flippard, for your bill that's on the floor. My name is Joni Essenberg. I am the co-founder and executive director of the Banyan community. The Banyan community is located in the Phillips neighborhood of South Minneapolis. Banyan has been serving our community for 22 years now. And we've actually been working through this food program with Youth Prize since 2016. So that's been 5 years now that Banyan has been a partner with Youth Prize with our food. Banyan is a community development organization in the Phillips neighborhood, and we do three main things. We develop youth, strengthen families, and create community. And if you know anything about food, it does all those things. It develops youth, it strengthens families, and it creates community. When you can sit down and have a meal together, that makes a big difference. Having this food program at Banyan has done three basic things. It has only increased our trust in community because we serve food. It has actually increased our participation in programs and also stabilized program participants. And also it has allowed our youth to have input on the menus, something kids are always excited about. So we're really pleased with this program. It has been vital to our work, and Banyan has been doing this for many years, as you know. During the pandemic, this certainly increased as Banyan was able to remain open during the entire pandemic, and having this food on site for youth and families counting on that has been big. So if you can imagine, we're sitting down and eating this food, and of course, kids don't love every single meal, but a majority of them they love. And they'll, you know, pick and choose through it, but there's lots of conversations that go on. And so we feed kids kindergarten all the way through high school at Banyan because they all come to Banyan for our after-school programs. We also, Banyan will pay the extra fee to feed our staff this food. We have hungry college students that are working at Banyan, and so they are able to access this food. And the third thing is that Banyan actually employs neighborhood residents to serve this food so that we're able to be able to serve a good meal, and our residents who are employees feel good about that as well. So Banyan serves about 400 meals weekly during the school year and 250 meals during the summer. Those meals are going into the Phillips neighborhood, into the children and families that live there. Alternately, if we didn't have this food program, we would have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And you all may smile at that, but actually that's what Banyan did before. We would make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and the kids actually thought we would make them and put them in the the bread loaves. And as we pull out a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, they thought we bought sandwiches like this. But we had staff actually making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So this is a real story. So ultimately, we would have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, or we could order some food from Minneapolis Public School. However, the kids would have already had those meals at school earlier that day. So for us, it makes a big deal to be able to have this, because we would not be able to manage all of the administration of the federal food program. So what Youth Prize provides for us is that very important in between. I want to thank you for your consideration. To me, it makes sense to have a targeted exemption for the sales tax in order to be able to provide more meals in our community. So I hope that you will support Bill number 1201. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Essenberg. Is there anyone else from the public who's on this Zoom meeting that would like to testify on House File 1201? If not, I'm going to go to members' questions. Representative McDonald.
Yes, thank you very much. Question, definitely a great program, and I do support the tax exemption, but I'm just curious from our testifiers as to if there's any, well, I'm sure there is, but perhaps not a waste. I know in the school districts, our public school districts, there's so much waste of food at the lunchtime. It's a sin, in my personal humble opinion. I've seen the waste myself. The kids are forced to take food that they don't necessarily want, but it's healthy, and then they just end up throwing it away. So just curious as to what your program has experienced, both in Mankato and then the other testifier.
Ms. Ford, would you like to start on that one?
Certainly. I can't speak to the specifics of our site, but I can speak to the option of programs being able to recycle. So food that hasn't been eaten, I know that that is a practice available to schools to reduce waste. I would need to check in with my food service director to speak more specifically. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Essenberg, anything to add on that?
Sure. There's two things that Banyan does to help we're not going to prevent all the food waste. There is going to be food waste. I mean, I'm a mother of six children, and my refrigerator, I had to go through every week and throw out some food. So let's just be realistic, okay? I hear what you're saying, but there is some reality here. There's children. So I think what happens is the food waste seems a large amount because you're feeding a large amount of people in one location. In my house of six children, we had a lot of food waste, because they didn't always like what I served. So that's a challenge right there. But the two things that we do at Banyan is, number one, we do give input on the menu choice so that kids are able to help. We're able to identify which foods they like to eat. And so that helps. The second thing we do is we have what's a sharing table. So after you're served everything, because it is true you have to be served everything, if you don't want that whole apple, you can put it on the sharing table. And then if another kid wants that apple, then they can come in and pick up that apple. So those are two things that we've done to help with that food waste.
Very good. Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Yes, I understand you're going to have some food waste. I have three boys, and that happens. Of course, I grew up in a family of seven, nine with my folks, and there was hardly any food to eat. So you grab what you could. So not much waste back there. Then just lastly, are you able to give the food away, any leftover food, to a local food shelf or a senior center? Just curious on that.
Either one, Ms. Ford, Ms. Essenberg.
Mr. Chair, this is Matt Norris.
Mr. Norris.
And maybe Ms. Ford or Ms. Essenberg might be able to talk about what they do specifically, but my understanding is there are some limits that are set by the USDA and the federal regulations around that are in terms of what you can do with the food. And I think there's a lot of room for innovation there, quite frankly, myself, but we are somewhat hamstrung by the USDA rules and regulations that we have to operate the program under.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, I was afraid of that, that some of the rules and regulations by the USDA, you'd have to abide by them, and there's definitely some reforms there. Lastly, Mr. Chair, Representative Lippert, I didn't see the cost of this. I was trying to find it on an email in my phone, but I couldn't find it in time. So what's the fiscal note of the cost of this to the state?
I have that if you don't, Representative Lippert.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So, and I'm sorry, I should have mentioned this earlier. So the revenue estimate for 22 and 23 is $1.9 million. And then in the next biennium, a little over $2 million. So roughly $1 million a year. Representative McDonald, anything further?
That's good, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you, Representative Lippert, for bringing this bill. I am a supporter of this and am a longtime friend of Ms. Essenberg and the work of the Banyan. I was on the board back in the day when her kitchen table was where we made the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Really, she did like hundreds in her kitchen every morning. It was quite the operation. And I've been at Banyan in the more recent years when they're using this program, and the kids are so excited. You just have to watch out because you are going to get steamrolled by when these kids run through the door to get the really excellent quality food that they really depend on. So I'm a fan of this program. I think it's a wise use of the larger decisions we have to make as a committee, and I appreciate everyone's testimony and hard work on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I'll be supporting this bill. And I do have a question either for the author, Representative Lippert, or with Matt Morris. Is there any, I know it's a federal program, is there any food that you purchase that you have to pay back, that you will have to pay taxes on, even if we pass this bill?
Mr. Norris or Representative Lippert? Mr. Norris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, my understanding is that this bill would cover all the meals that we serve as long as they are within the CACFP program for the school year or the SFSP program for the summer. There are, perhaps some exemptions for that. Ms. Essenberg mentioned they purchase additional meals from us essentially to cover some of their college staff who are working with their students in their youth programming. We'd have to work with the Department of Revenue to see if perhaps those meals might be excluded from this. But the vast majority, the ones that we actually serve to the eligible young people, those would be covered or under this bill.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So if the nonprofit purchases prepared food for other purposes, that food remains taxable. And is that what I understand?
Mr. Okay. Norris?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, yes, that's correct. The bill is limited specifically. I'm sorry if that was your initial question.
Yeah,
it
was.
Specifically to food purchase for the CACFP or SFSP program.
Okay.
Representative Detmer?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you. And, I grew up in Faribault, so I grew up in a dairy farm. So go Faribault Falcons over there. And I grew up in a farm, and across from our farm is a one-room schoolhouse. I spent 6 years in a one-room schoolhouse. I won't trade that for anything. So anyway, thank you.
You bet. I don't see any further questions. So Representative Leppard, closing comments on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate the time today and the conversation around how we make sure that these dollars that are going to address food security needs are going as far as they possibly can. So I thank the committee for its support.
Representative Leppard and testifiers, thank you so much. Representative Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 1201 as amended for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Representative Leppard. Next on the agenda, we have House File 1334, Representative Herr, St. Paul Water Treatment Facility provided exemption for construction materials. Representative Herr, would you like to move your bill?
I would, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 1334 be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Herr. And you also have a DE1 amendment. Would you like to move that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the DE amendment. Would you like me to tell you a little bit about the amendment
you
now?
Can. You can, yes, absolutely. It?
So the DE amendment, this provides a partially retroactive refundable sales tax exemption on materials and supplies used and equipment incorporated into the renovation of the McCarran's water treatment plant, provided that the purchase occurs after December 31st of 2020 and before January 1st of 2027.
Okay, very good. So members, let's put this in the form that the author would like the bill. So any questions, comments on the DE1 amendment? If not, I'm going to go to the vote. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Herr, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and committee members for hearing House File 1334. This bill is a sales tax exemption for the McCarran's treatment process improvements. The St. Paul Regional Water Services is a municipal corporation, a drinking water utility that serves approximately 450,000 residents of St. Paul, including the state capitol complex and the surrounding communities of Maplewood, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Roseville, Little Canada, and Arden Hills. They treat and produce our water at the McCarran's Water Treatment Plant. Many parts of this treatment plant are nearly 100 years old. There is a need for St. Paul Regional Water Services to make major improvements to the facility during the next 5 years. Preliminary project scope and budget estimates suggest the cost of this project will be approximately $160 million. Minnesota's state sales tax law allows government agencies to be exempt from sales and use tax under specified circumstances. For a construction project of this nature, such an exemption generally requires that the utility and contractors enter into a purchasing agent agreement. This arrangement is difficult to administer and requires the utility to assume greater risk and an increased administrative cost for the project. Because of the additional risks associated with utilizing a purchase agent agreement, the request is that the state legislator amend Minnesota Statute 297A.71 to exempt all construction materials from sales tax. There is historical precedence for such legislations for cities and utilities pursuing similar projects such as a fire station in Monticello, Amber Grove Heights, and Mendota Heights. So there is no fiscal cost to the state. And Mr. Chair, I would like to yield the rest of my time to Patrick Shia and Dave Wagner from the St. Paul Regional Water Services to provide testimony and answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you so much. And so we have Patrick Shea here. Do you care to testify?
Yes, thank you very much, Representative Herr and Chair Marquardt and members of this committee. My name is Patrick Shea, and I currently serve as the Assistant General Manager at St. Paul Regional Water Services. We are a regional drinking water service provider to 14 cities in the East Metro, including the capital city of St. Paul. We are governed by the Regional Board of Water Commissioners with representatives from the cities we serve. Our customer base of over 450,000 residents in the East Metro area, and this regional project will benefit the entire East Metro region for the next 100 years. We are here today regarding House File 1334, which asks for an exemption of state sales taxes for materials and supplies, which will be used in the McCarran's Water Treatment Plant Improvement Project. As stated earlier, the facility has served the region with distinction for over 100 years and is in need of both rehabilitation and modernization. Today, I am joined by our engineering manager, Dave Wagner. Together, we look forward to answering any detailed questions you may have at the conclusion of this testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shea. And as Representative Herr correctly said, there is no fiscal note cost to it, but there is a revenue estimate of $1.8 million for this biennium and $1.8 million into the next biennium. So any questions for the testifier or the author? Is there anyone from the public that is on this Zoom meeting that would like to testify to House File 1334 as amended? If not, Representative Herr. You're muted, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You think by now I'd figure this out. Mr. Chair, I have no additional comments. I just appreciate the committee's time for listening to this really important project and the request being made, and that I renew my motion that House File 1334 be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Herr and Mr. Shea and Mr. Wagner for being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to move to the last bill on the agenda, House File 1503. Chair Davids, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, sir, I would.
Please proceed.
Okay. Maybe we could have staff give an overview.
Very good. So Representative Davids moves House File 1503 be laid over for possible inclusion. And before we go any further with this, there is a letter of support that you have from the League of Minnesota Cities members. So with that, if Ms. Hagler could tell us what this bill does.
Mr. Chair and members, Alex Hagler, House Research. So this bill is going to provide the general construction exemption for public safety facilities, that be fire stations, police stations, and any associated training facilities or other such things like that that are related to the fire or police station. So as you all know, we've heard a number of one-off individual cities asking for this type of exemption, but this bill 1503 would just provide the general exemption for all of those fire and police stations so that they wouldn't have to come to the legislature every time they needed one. And it is effective starting July 1 of this year. And the tax would be paid up front, and then the city would ask for a refund.
Very good.
Thank you, Ms. Hagler, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the bill we've all been waiting for and looking for. Instead of each city having some fire sales tax exemption, this would say if it's for a fire station or police station, that you're going to be exempt from the sales tax on the material. So I'd stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Davids, for bringing this forward. It does address the public safety facilities that we've been basically granting exemptions to in the past and hearing a lot of bills this year. So members, do you have any questions? Very good. Representative Davids, any last thoughts on House File 1503?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would again move that be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you very much. And how come is it that current chairs and former chairs of the tax committee never get any really grueling questions during their bills? I haven't quite figured that out. And, you know, you might have noticed, members, as a tradition also, and tax committee has a lot of traditions. But once you have been chair of the tax committee, you are always the chair, and within the committee, you're referred to that also. So another unwritten tradition in the illustrious tax committee. So,
well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just suggest that it's because we have an extremely high IQ on this committee.
Very good. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to let you know that I know I speak on behalf of the entire Republican caucus that's on the tax committee that our questioning of you, we're pacing ourselves. We're waiting for the omnibus bill, and you will receive no shortage of questions, accusations, and criticisms of whatever decisions you make. Just so sleep and easy at night, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Garofalo, as it should be. Absolutely. Thank you. Well, tomorrow, we do not have any meeting. That's going to be given to the Property Tax Division. On Tuesday or next week, we're going to be hearing a bill on the supplemental federal unemployment insurance. And, very good. We got to remember that these bills have been laid over, but we'll hear a bill, Representative Stevenson, on the federal supplemental unemployment insurance that folks got. So we'll hear that bill on Tuesday. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe you could give us a bit of an update on the PPP now that the state has a budget surplus. I think this is a very, very important issue. Now, I'm the leader of not bringing each tax bill to the floor. I think it's beyond an omnibus bill. Otherwise, I think you have death by a thousand cuts. But in this case, I'd just like to know what your thoughts are. And I would pledge to you from the Republican caucus, there would be no amendments. You get a ton of support if we could move this quickly. And this is one, and it's happened in the past, one I've been chair over the years too. Very seldom would I ever do it unless there's complete agreement from all sides. But I can pledge there would be no tomfoolery, skullduggery, or shenanigans from our side of the aisle if a good PPP bill moved. Just your thoughts, if you could.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Chair Davids. I do appreciate that. And as the author of House File 501, which does the full conformity for the Paycheck Protection Program, we have to take action. And I have been encouraged with, I think, leadership. I know they're meeting on this. And so it would be leadership ultimately that would determine if we were to do a bill earlier. And I do feel good that we're in a good position for that, because we did hear House File 501. It's sitting here in the committee. So if we need to move quickly on that, I mean, we have everything in place, and just get the green light from leadership if that would occur. We do want to make sure also that as we do this, that we include all businesses and all workers who lost their jobs. And I say that because even if we, conform to the full, what we have before us, the full $438 million, those businesses, and according to the Department of Revenue, it's probably about two-thirds of the businesses that did not see an income. They operated with a loss this year. They would not see any benefit in 2020. So we could spend $438 million on conformity, but these businesses that have been hit the hardest, our restaurants and so forth, that saw a loss this year, they wouldn't see one dime of relief in 2020. Now, they would see net operating losses that they could apply forward. But we know that those are the type of businesses that need relief right now. And so a big part of that is we don't want to leave those businesses behind as we come up with something. And the tax committee, I know, is going to be working on that. And then also, I think it's important, we also include, as kind of all together with this, is those workers who lost their jobs and received the federal unemployment assistance. And, that's also taxable, and I'd like to see those taxes forgiven. So we want to make sure we include everyone, not leave anyone behind, especially those that have been hit the hardest. But I appreciate your question, and I will say I've been in contact with leadership on this, in fact, today again. And so, it's going to ultimately be a leadership call, but I appreciate, David's, your comments on the fact that no amendments and we would see this move forward. So thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do know that Representative Dave Baker has a couple of bills that would address some of the things that you were mentioning, which I think are very important. But I just want you to know, and I think you know that on this issue, my side aisle really does want to help you on this. And if we can get this to the floor, we would not offer amendments.
Right. Thank you very much, Chair Davids. This is certainly a bipartisan effort that's bipartisanly supported to do that. And I think it was last week we did hear one of Representative Baker's bills, and I know he has others moving forward. So very good. Any other thoughts on this, members? If not, we will see you next week. Thank you so much for your work this week in committee. And with that, the Taxes Committee is adjourned.